listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio. You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio, and that is the Cramps doing Rockin' Bones, brought in as all the music will be this show by my guest Gail Harold. Gail, it's so great to have you back on the show. Thanks for being here with me, my friend.
Thank you. R.I.P. Lux Interior. Have to say that first.
Oh, right?
Right.
The Cramps are amazing.
And will always be so.
I don't know that I would have taken you for a Cramps fan. I have a feeling that we're going to learn a lot about each other today.
Good.
Because I had no idea that you liked the Cramps. When I was in college, my boyfriend turned me on to the Cramps. He loved the Cramps. And when I first moved up here, while I was still in college, my best friend lived with me for a while, and she got a job interning at Capitol Records. So she got to go through all the stuff, all the free CDs, and they had all this Cramps stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost our minds.
Yes. I've lost my mind several times. Where is my mind, as some would say?
So tell me a little bit about sort of what your life has been like with music. I mean, I know we talked a little bit the first time you were here that you've never really professionally played music, although you do a little bit, don't you? You sing a bit, write a bit?
I try a little bit. I try. I don't consider myself a musician by any means, but that song, Rockin' Bones, has a dear place in my heart, because when I was a kid growing up in Atlanta, I had some friends had a band called Rockin' Bones, and I thought to myself, wow, that's your band, Rockin' Bones? Did you name your band after that song? And then there was a huge fight.
Oh, no.
A bit of disagreement between some and others, but anyway, they were amazing. But I kind of have those kind of memories. I associate a lot of things with certain songs and certain bands.
Yeah, I do too. Times.
You know, it makes you feel really good, and it's really good to play a song like that right now, knowing that other people are going to be hearing it.
Right, and some for the first time.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah.
So now, growing up in Atlanta, did you grow up in the city or outside of the city?
I was born at Crawford Long Hospital downtown. I grew up in Stone Mountain and Decatur and DeKalb County, Tucker. Kind of around, not,
okay.
I wasn't a downtown
sort of the burbs.
Person. Burbish, yes.
So was it, because I grew up all different places. My dad got transferred for work a lot, so we went all over the place. And then when I was 13 here, there were a lot of bands that I had never heard of until I got here.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Atlanta is kind of a cultural mecca and has always been kind of really interesting as far as the music scene goes. Did you find bands like the Cramps there pretty easy?
I found a lot of bands listening to the radio, like a lot of people do. There are some amazing record stores there. One, Wax and Facts, Walk Street Records. You know, the guys that worked there, they just blew my mind on a regular basis. And so I'd take whatever money I could ferret away and take in there and say, lay one on me. And then that, you get addicted to that experience and it just keeps growing, you know?
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
But the last stop we made before here was Baltimore. Mm. And Baltimore was all progressive rock, heavy rock, hard rock. And of course the AM stations played all the top 40 stuff.
Right.
But it was all Zeppelin, Aerosmith, Yes, Queen.
Uh-huh.
And then I came out here and K-Rock had started already. And so it was this whole bunch of music that we didn't get. I mean, unless it was Blondie or the Ramones or something, you didn't hear what we now consider to be sort of alternative bands or punk bands on the radio.
Yeah.
And I discovered all that the first year I was here, which was kind of a magic time. It was when New Wave was starting. And it was just so weird to know there was this whole kind of music I knew nothing about.
Right. Well, it's the good and the bad. Not the bad, but everything's digitized now. And so you can find things so rapidly, which is amazing. But I don't regret at all thumbing through bins, you know, and looking through
Absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely.
And just those images. Like when I got here, you were talking to someone was just about to sign off, and he was talking about graphic novels,
oh,
comics.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
One of the songs that I brought is Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy. And I remember the first time I saw that record, if anybody, just look it up. This beautifully sort of still animated image of this guy breaking through the outer space with that Thin Lizzy font of their name and gray and silver and black with the red. It's just, you have to check it out. But that's what I miss, that I can't go into record stores all the time and not have any idea what I'm about to see. It's amazing still getting surprised, but it's not the same where you're going through the wrong letter and you find, you know, whatever it is that surprised you.
Eddie
Cochran in the church bin or something.
Right. Or you're just somewhere. I discovered Everything But the Girl, who I love, in Honolulu. I was in Hawaii with my parents. I'd never been to Hawaii. And we went to the Hard Rock Cafe because my mom had never been to one. And then they were doing their parent thing, and I saw Tower Records, and I thought, weird, there's a Tower Records in Honolulu, because, you know, everything in Hawaii just seems so different.
Right.
Before the internet, everything didn't seem so connected.
Yeah.
And I wandered in, and they were playing the Idlewild album, and I just walked up and said, what is this? And they showed it to me, and I bought it, and then I wrapped it in beach towels to bring it home in the suitcase. And that was the first thing I opened to make sure it wasn't damaged, because, you know, vinyl is, it's precious. It's not just like, you have a million copies like you do now. Now you've got copies on your computer. You keep it on the iPod, on your phone. Then you just had, that was it. You had your album.
But the fear is still there. I mean, next time I will bring vinyl and a turntable today, I just couldn't risk that I was going to get stuck in a sunny parking space and something was going to get warped. That record that we listened to first, Psychedelic Jungle, I just got that from Kim's in New York. It's a reprint of, and it's beautiful, and it's so pristine. And I knew if I had it in my car, I'd end up having a flat tire or something in the the noon sun, and it would melt or get warped or something. I just couldn't do it.
Right. No, and no vinyls to go nowhere. Even kind of CDs. I mean, I know people that are crazy about their CD collection.
Yeah.
The CDs get copied to things that then go in the car, but they don't really go in the car.
Right.
Nothing really should go in the car. But the thumb drive you can carry on you. So do you want me to? Should I load that? You bought the Thin Lizzy album separately?
I did.
Let me load that. So tell me a little bit about your history with Thin Lizzy. When did you discover them? Because they're magic and amazing, right?
I think it was that copy of Jailbreak that I got like for 99 cents in a cutout bin somewhere, and which is bizarre because it's an original press,
Right.
And that was either at Wax and Facts or Wuxtry at some point, and looking at Phil Lynott's face and like, trying to figure out, this guy's obviously from like the Bronx or from Queens or something, and then I'm figuring out they're from Ireland. Like,
right.
What the
Right,
that?
From Ireland. Yeah. You know? Now, are you part Irish? Are you people from there?
I'm not really sure. We don't have a definite understanding of where we're from. It's somewhere between Holland, Wales, Ireland, perhaps.
Okay.
Not really sure.
Because you have that love of music that I think a lot. I'm Irish, and I think a lot of us just it's just in us. Mm. My Irish friends call it the Irish flame. That when you hear music, the flame gets lit.
Well, being in Hawaii and hearing Everything But the Girl is a
right?
magical thing, because that beautiful
her voice,
about
right?
it and
uh-huh.
in that context.
Yeah.
That's the flame.
Well, and you know, and her voice is kind of as it has that kind of richness and that energy latent quality that mm-hmm. Hawaii has. You know, Hawaii is like an energy ball with some buildings stuck on
right,
it.
Right.
And very much, you know, her voice is kind of the same way. And so strange to find that there. But I think if you leave yourself open to music, you find it anywhere.
Yeah. If now, you leave yourself open, it can sneak up on you too, in a way that, you know, when you're young or you're driving down the street and you hear some song that blows your mind, that can always happen. But if you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it and then you get bored and you've already heard it a few times, that you've had that feeling when it happens again, it's such a great... That's how I remember I heard that band, the Black Angels, for the first time by accident, and I kind of jaw-dropped. What's this?
I'll tell you something I was just thinking about while I was loading the Thin Lizzy album and you were talking. In the 18 and a half years I've been on the radio, I've never done this.
No.
I mean, I've played a lot of music. I've had music shows. I've had guests in to play their music. But I've never just sat with somebody and just played music for fun. This is the first time. It's amazing. It was your idea.
This copy of this record, I don't have all my Thin Lizzy's on vinyl. This was given to me by a very, very lovely and very giving, gracious fan. Put it in my hands, and I had no idea. I don't even know how she knew that I liked Thin Lizzy. She just handed it to me. So.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Now, was it a European fan?
Yes.
Because Thin Lizzy has there's a whole different love for that band over there, and mm-hmm. I didn't know that until I started booking bands from Europe here, mm-hmm. and I met some guys who were from France, and I met some guys that were from Amsterdam. And I learned that Thin Lizzy is almost sort of, I think, what here Rush is. It's like the musician's music. When people are learning to play music, they study Thin Lizzy.
I would believe that. And it's such a tragic story, too. I mean,
yeah.
it's tragic and sad. But luckily for us, there's something left to listen to. And there's so much soul. And
Amazing.
It's so clean. It's so tight and clean, which is not typically the kind of music that I'm into. But there's so much heart inside how clean it is.
Right. So what kind of stuff, before you started discovering things on your own and finding independent record stores and finding things in the bins, what was sort of around you when you were younger? What was being played in the South when you were growing up?
In the South, well, I grew up in the church, so I wasn't really allowed to get too adventurous. There was a lot of music in the church.
Right, which is beautiful.
Which is beautiful. I don't know. I heard Elvis. I heard Elvis a lot, and I developed an early kind of passion for that. I heard a lot of Elvis gospel records, you know?
Yeah.
But I also heard a lot of... Eddie Cochran, and that always kind of just found a place into my brain that it never left. But church music, you know, Jimmy Swaggart and all of Jerry Lee Lewis, I mean.
Right, all that passion.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
the passion from yeah. the church and from people who came out of
yeah.
the church.
And then as I got older, listening to the radio, Georgia Tech has a really good radio station. I heard a lot of blues and a lot of, you know, even stuff that I wasn't even prepared to listen to initially, you know, Coltrane, heavy, heavy, heavy stuff, you know, for a kid of like 14 years old. And, it was kind of good that I wasn't allowed to listen to it because it made me want it more, you know?
Yeah, right. So were you a kid that were there things in the house you couldn't have had? Like, for instance, I at 11 was in the KISS Army, and my mom was all good with that. At first, she was not so much. Then the boys, the neighbors from Catholic school, they bought KISS Alive 2 to sort of rebel against their parents. They kept it hidden. Right. So they brought it to my house where it wouldn't be confiscated because I had the liberal parents.
Right.
And my mom saw it, and I think at first she died a little. And then she, you know, I had grown up with her taking me to Gilbert and Sullivan and musicals and operas. So I told her what the stage show was about, and she said, oh, I get it. It's theater. So she loved the costumes, so she let me join the KISS Army, and she filled out the check for me so I could be in the KISS Army. And I had the posters all over my walls, and she was all good with that. But I had friends that it was like, oh, no KISS in the house.
Yeah, I lost some records as a result of those kinds of reactions. I once lost a double live Susie and the Banshees record with a cover of Dear Prudence on it with Robert Smith playing guitar. If anyone remembers that period of Susie and the Banshees, and it began with their stage cue was The Rites of Spring by Stravinsky. That's how they came on the stage, and that record blew my F double asterisk mind, and it scared the sh out of my mom.
Oh no!
And it vanished with some other ones, and I have a copy of it now, but I'll never get that gatefold double beautiful one. I can't find it anywhere.
Right.
I've got like a cheap version of it now, but yeah. Got to be careful which records you leave around, you know.
Yeah. No, I lost. I had that, and I guess now it's very collectible. The four album. Is it? It's a four album Elvis Greatest Hits. The one that's blue, and he's in the white suit on the front. And it says RCA really big on it. Anyway, my mom had gotten it for me in a store, and she loved Elvis, so I loved it. And then we were moving from one place to another, and I had it on the turntable, went to school, and didn't know that the painters were coming.
Uh-huh.
So I have one side of it where there's like white paint dust on it. I mean, it still sort of plays, but it's a little scratchy from the paint dust, and it's a little warped from them moving the record player into the sunshine.
Ouch.
But then I found out years and years later that that's actually a very rare album, so... I don't know why, but I still have it. I have everything. I know, even the cheesy stuff and the disco from when I was nine and I kept it all.
I got really angry at one point with life in general and made a stupid move and sold a bunch of records and I will regret that. I had like a plastic little box of 45s by The Jam with Beat Surrender and Town Called Malice, I think, or something. And I kill myself. Well, theoretically, all the time, thinking about that. But
Town Called Malice is insane.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So now, when you were young, obviously, even before you were an actor, you were a fine artist. So did music play a part of that? I mean, did music and art go hand in hand to you, fine art and music?
I think that it did, you know. I think that so much of my attention was diverted into thinking about songs, you know, or performances, the bands that I'd seen, and... And I got wrapped up in photography sort of, I guess, as a like an escape more than anything, you know? I had a decent camera, and I learned pretty quickly how to use it with low light and with fire involved and things like that.
Wonderful.
And that seemed kind of like, you know, something you could find in a record somewhere, you know?
And did you have a dark room? Did you develop yourself?
I processed all my stuff in my school's dark room.
Okay.
And then I had one in Atlanta that was decent, but my roommates weren't too excited about all the chemicals, so I gave it up. And then I sort of walked away from it for a bit, and then I processed everything else in school in San Francisco because there, you know, the photo lab was there, so that was all that was on site. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think for some people, for some fine artists, it's about the silence. I mean, they love the silence that comes when making the art. But then for some fine artists, they paint, sculpt, take photos, whatever, develop, while there's a lot of music playing, and the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, no, I always like to have music around. I just, there's two things. I mean, when I started learning how to screen print, that was a new thing because it was so almost robotic, ritualistic, learning how to drag color and wiping paper, and then I got into doing etching, you know, photo etching with plates, and that's really cool because, well, that sounds so cliche, that's really cool, but it allows you to lock into a repetition, you know, of registration and lining, and you discover a lot of things that way, but it's kind of like you're preaching a mantra to yourself while you're working it out, you know, which is a great escape.
Right? Well, there's a, I think there's a rhythm to it, like there is with music.
Well, there can be, if
there
you're
can,
good.
There can be a rhythm with art.
When you find it, you know? When you find, especially when you're dragging colors, if you've got the setup that you want and you want to make a multiple page run, then yeah, you definitely can get into a rhythm, sometimes by necessity, so that your ink goes down right, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's it. You know what, my mom is very all about the rhythm and everything. I mean, being Irish, and she's a fine artist. I'm the worst fine artist, but she's a brilliant fine artist. And my grandfather, oddly enough, was a screen printer.
Really?
So she had all of his blocks and all of his stuff from, you know, 100 years ago. And when I was a kid, she would use them. She would actually, she still got them. They're still in the, still at her house.
Wow.
But she would use them, and I would watch her do it. And there's definitely a rhythm. And as you said, with art and photography, sometimes there has to be a rhythm or things get ruined.
Yeah.
You have to be, there's a timing to it. But I think there's something kind of beautiful about the rhythm of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the rhythms are all, they're, you know, it's all purpose oriented. But then there's the mistakes too that happen within the rhythms that a lot of times give you a way out and find something new. But when you're, you know, that's a good part of the process too, not being so obsessed with perfection, or not being so obsessed with preventing accidents. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because some of the best images are the ones that have slight flaws, quote unquote.
Yeah, right? That's very true. That's true. Okay, let's play something. What do you want to do next? Set up what we're going to do. It's all you. You're my DJ tonight.
Let's listen to track 18 from that Thin Lizzy I just gave you.
Yeah, let's do that.
That should be Jailbreak.
Okay. Let me go find where I put it.
I think that's right. Is it 18?
So now, what CD is this from that I just loaded?
This is like a greatest hits, a collection called Waiting for an Alibi, Thin Lizzy.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes, Jailbreak is track 19.
19.
Here we go.
Excellent.
All right, let's do it. It's the Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. Today it's just me and Gail, and we're spinning tunes. So this is Thin Lizzy, Jailbreak. Check it out. We'll be right back with you after this.
Rock.
Jailbreak, so go to be around. Tonight is gonna
You've just found the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio.
The Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. That was Thin Lizzy, Jailbreak. I forgot how much I love that song. Thin Lizzy is one of those bands, right, Gail, that every time I'm here with Gail Harold and we're just playing music. Every time I hear one of their songs, I forget how much I love them. It sneaks up on you sometimes.
I don't know. I can't really forget. I'm thinking about it so much. It's one of those, maybe it's my attention deficit disorder coming in, but I'm always thinking about those things running
yes.
at counterpoint. Right?
I'm thrilled that between your ADD and mine, that we're actually getting songs played and we're not stepping on anything and
exactly.
Things aren't getting stopped in the middle because, yeah, I've got that too. So do you like them as much as you always have, or are they somebody – when did you find Thin Lizzy in your life?
I was in high school, you know. I think I was probably in – I would think maybe 9th, 10th grade. And it was honestly, at the time when I listened to it, it was so different. Like, I had that sort of perfunctory teenage thing where I hated every band that was Southern for a while. Like, I couldn't stand Lynyrd Skynyrd because my sister loved them. But now when I listen to Thin Lizzy, I think about how much of that, like, intrinsic, painful soul that they kind of share, you know?
Yeah.
So when I heard that, I'm like, you know, I don't really have to listen to the Allman Brothers anymore. I don't really have to listen to anything my sister likes. I can listen to this. That was kind of the stepping off point. Now, of course, I love all that more than I thought I ever would, but,
yeah, I do too. I think for a while as a kid, when I was very young, it was very kind of country music and Southern rock was sort of romanticized for me because my mom loved it so much.
Yeah.
So I was just telling a guest yesterday, on the show that just did a duet with Kris Kristofferson that I learned to sing to his songs, you know. That was, I learned about music from listening to the Me and Bobby McGee album. I mean, unbelievable stuff.
Well, that brings up another one of those stories, one of those moments. I mean, of all the ones that you have, for me, one of, like, hearing Sunday Morning Coming Down, that song.
Right, the most amazing.
And hearing that song and then learning the story about where that song came from and how he got it to Johnny Cash and how that, with the helicopter landing on the front lawn
right.
and all that, I mean, it's like,
amazing.
it couldn't be more epic.
Right, yes.
And so romantic and so badass. Like,
yeah.
And of course, Johnny Cash is the guy that would say, you just landed a helicopter on my front yard. Come in here for a second. Let me hear this song. And then he plays it for me. Says, yeah, I want to record that. Jesus Christ, you know?
Right, right. But there's so much emotion in every one of those songs.
Right.
And just unbelievable. So I think for a while I didn't, you know, I think for a while it was cool not to like country. But, you know, my mom's from Kentucky. I'm a granddaughter of the South, and it comes for you.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's it doesn't surprise me that so much of the Southern rock bands kind of, and Thin Lizzy, all the influences sort of moving back and forth because so much of the South, so much of Southern music came out of Irish music.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's kind of the same evolution on Scotch-Irish on two different coasts, the same exact evolution. So.
It's also fascinating when you grow up and you start to realize how difficult it is to write and perform a very simple song that has a lot of weight to it because it's so stripped down, it's so bare, it's so minimal. But try it once or twice and find out
yeah.
that it's like
exactly
it's
yeah.
like trying to do a Rubik's cube with your eyes closed.
Yeah. Know? So did you ever think about getting in a band? Did you ever want to play or pick
up
a guitar?
I always wanted to be inside that feeling, you know. But I don't think I ever really really wanted it because if I really really wanted it, I would have gone for it.
Absolutely.
Know?
Sure.
But it's always sometimes I dream about it. I'll wake up just walking off stage, you know.
Wow, really?
No, but
have you ever been on stage? Have you ever performed on the stage?
I've performed once in a play. I played and sang a song in a show that I did of Orpheus Descending.
Right.
But that's
which you were here for.
Which I was here for with Denise. Yeah.
Right.
That's the only time I've ever done it, and that was honestly the most bizarrely terrifying thing I've ever done because when you're performing on stage and you're performing a play that someone else has written, your voice is there, but you're interacting with the other actors and you know what your character's doing and there's the people and you can hear them breathing and moving and their chairs move. But when you've got a piece of wood in your hand and you're trying to stay in tune and keep up, the rhythm. It's weird, and I'm totally green. So I can remember there going off key a couple times, and then it sounded like the loudest, most intense thing I'd ever heard. It's almost as if everyone got closer to me that was sitting in the house. Their ears got bigger, and they're like, "How are you going to get out of that one?" And you just have to keep going, you know. So,
yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, it made me rethink everything about what a performer does. Until you do something that's that far outside of what you think you understand how to do, you'll never be able to appreciate it. And then it's almost, that first night, I'm like, I can't do this again. I can't go back out there. There's no way I'm gonna be able to do it again. Like, I did it once, so I need to move to Brazil and be done, because I can't.
I can scratch that off the list. Now I need to quit. Quit. Note to self: quit acting.
Just because I gotta go somewhere I can't be found.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, but you know, it's I think you would find that music, it like acting, you know, sometimes I think when I interview actors and I talk to them, they'll say, "Oh, that wasn't my best day," or "You came and saw the show and that wasn't my best performance." But I didn't notice. I thought it was amazing. And so it's the same thing with music, I think. When you get up and you perform music on a stage, you know every time you went out of tune, and you know every time you were off a millibeat. Mm-hmm. But the audience is more feeling the energy that comes off you than they're listening for every note to be perfect.
Yeah, it's true.
They're loving the experience of that energy exchange, which is beautiful. And I think when they go to see a play, it's the same thing. But there's something about music. And plus, when you front a band, it's so loud, people can't hear every tiny little thing.
Well, it's also that, you know...
And that's nice.
If the person that you're watching is performing a song that either they've written or they've collaborated writing,
right.
The ideas are coming from them, you know? And so I don't think... I can't even imagine what that would be like. I was just watching. There's this documentary about Ike and Tina Turner, the new one. It was new to me. I was watching those, and it's a lot of it is found footage or footage that was, I believe, resourced from maybe a member of her family. There, a lot of home video or home film, you know, but some of the clips that they showed of them performing on stage, the energy behind her and her singers and the band,
yeah,
and what they were doing, I just kept rewinding song after song after song and watching it. And I can imagine being in that house watching them perform.
Yeah.
They could have done anything. They could have painted themselves green, and I would have been totally mesmerized, yeah, by all of it, you know.
Well, I mean, it makes you understand why people, you know, sit on the street and, you know, line up for months at a time to get tickets to things. I mean, you know, it used to be when bands came. I remember when I was in college, my friend camped out for 4 days for Depeche Mode tickets. He's like, "Do you want to go to Depeche Mode?" And I said, "Yeah, but I'm not camping out." He's like, "No, I'll camp out." And he camped out outside of like Sports Chalet or something crazy to get those tickets, because it's that important to get there and be in that experience, so you're having that experience. So when people tell me, "Oh, you know, I think live music is dying," or "I think it's all going to the internet," people will human beings, as long as we're alive and breathing, will never get sick of that experience of sitting in the middle of all of that and feeling what that is like.
Yeah. It's a huge gift, you know, when someone's willing to do that, to put that much of their life into something, then that's never going anywhere. That's only going to get stronger as we progress. If it could get stronger, but I think it could, you know.
But live theater doesn't scare you.
Yeah, sure it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it scares you just enough. Because you're not in Brazil yet.
No. I would love to go to Brazil and do something, but no, I mean, yeah. Totally. I mean, it all scares me. It all scares me. Going into a room and reading for a part scares me to death. I have not mastered that that calm, that kind of, some actors that I know have this just resilience. A lot of that is from getting your ass kicked repeatedly, you
sure
know, and you
yeah
build up some strength.
Yep.
I just wish that I wish that my armor would come into place wherever it is. Lost it somehow, but
Is it easier in front of a camera because it's less people? It's much more intimate. It's not, you know, it's not.
Depends. I find that the older I get, I'm always cataloging and prejudging a lot of things based on all the times that I thought I came short. You know, like when someone says, "You came to see me tonight. I wasn't on. It's one of those mental states that you have to try and leave it alone,
yeah,
let it go, but it's always there, you know.
Right.
So if you're on camera, I can, you know, you're doing a part and it reminds you, the scene reminds you of a scene of another part you played, and then all of a sudden these echoes, you just got to focus on your character and let them make the mistake and know that you're just the voice box that's doing it.
You know? Just the channel.
Yeah.
I agree. But I agree with you. I don't think it's a good idea for people to say, oh, it wasn't my good show, or oh, it wasn't the best. I think that even though you feel that and it's good for you to maybe go home and discuss that with your significant other or friends, when an audience person comes to see you, they love it so much. They don't want to hear afterwards that you don't love it too.
Very good point.
They want to hear, oh, yeah, thank you. Even if you're like, oh, my God, I boned it. That was the worst night ever. Because for them, it was magic. And that's the thing, is that even sometimes what we think is our worst for people watching is magic.
Yeah, and it's a good point that you make, because especially if you're doing work, if you're in a performance that was written by someone that you really love, that if the writing's really good, to say that your performance wasn't that great is a little bit selfish and self-indulgent, and it does do a disservice to the people that came to see it. But that's just something that takes so long to learn, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
It's very, you know, to use another cliche, somewhat zen, to get your mind to that place where you can just back away from it and let it be what it is, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and to get sort of I think as artists, we're always wrestling with our public face and our private face. You know,
can't
sometimes you can't let all the private insecurities show. And that's hard, because we have to be very open all the time, or we can't make art. So we go around kind of open all the time.
There's a reason people used to think that cameras would steal your soul, and that's why they would cut your head off if you pulled out a machine, right?
Yeah, I kind of get it sometimes.
You can't leave it alone. You know?
And microphones, which are soul stealers as well,
exactly.
Probably, according to the same tribes. Okay, what are we playing? Set this up for me.
I think we're going to listen to Baby Huey and the Babysitters. Hard times.
Let's do it. It's the Sheet of Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. It's just Gail Harold and me today spinning music, and I'm loving this show. We'll be right back after this great song.
They won't. discovering Shina
Metal. Continue to consider the source.
What if students could see and touch atoms? Or unlock the secrets of Stonehenge? Now they can. Introducing PBS Learning Media, a next-generation digital service that lets students dive deeper and changes how they learn. See how America's largest classroom is helping to build the classroom of tomorrow, today, at PBS Learning Media on KLCS.org.
The Performing Arts Institute separates itself from other actor training programs because of its unique focus on developing an actor's talent from classroom to set. The personalized training that creative director Paul Kampf offers gives actors a deep understanding of how to access real, undeniable truth, whether on stage, screen, or in the audition room that opens the doors to a career. Visit www.paitraining.com for more information. Film Lab is the professional production arm of PAI Training, where the focus is providing actors with high-level opportunities to shoot feature films, short films, and series projects, all with the goal of providing actors the best platform for their talent to be noticed. Film Lab supports the actors that call PAI their creative home. Visit www.paitraining.com for more information.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is. But how do you get it? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. Join us Monday nights, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, on LATalkRadio.com on Channel 1.
Friend, this is Renee Barnett for Night Vision Radio. In my work in television and film production, we use night vision photography to illuminate what's hidden in the dark. And that's what we try to do at Night Vision Radio. We shine a light on the secret, the strange, and the unusual. On NVR, you'll hear from the experts and the experiencers who'll help us understand and expose these strange and sometimes dark subjects. Please join me right here Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Time for Night Vision Radio. And check us out on nightvisionproductions.com. Real people, real stories, firsthand. Night Vision Radio.
Passion to create the finest quality instrument available anywhere. That's what Minarek Guitars is all about. With his patented tone chamber engineering, Mark Minarek revolutionized the sound of the guitar and bass. He transformed the ordinary guitar body using designs and shapes that truly make his guitars a playable work of art. With artists like Dave Navarro, Dick Dale, and Gene Simmons all playing a Minarek, you know the tone matches the talent. Visit Minarek Guitars online at Minarek Guitars, M-I-N-A-R-I-K, guitars.com.
Marino Da Silva, one of the greatest guitarists of our time. Satisfaction from Voodoo Charm, the album, on iTunes now. Discover the magic at marinorocks.com. Welcome to his rock and roll universe. I can't get no satisfaction.
Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio, and that is the Asexuals, Where Were You?, picked by my DJ all this show. Gail Harold is here with me. So, Gail, how did you find them? Because I've never heard of these guys.
I have a friend of mine, the maestro John Kastner, who I was introduced to by another very dear friend of mine, Hugo Marcotte, people that I got to know working, living in Canada, and just very good people, and that's John's band. That was John's band.
Oh, wow.
Legendary.
That's
legendary.
Awesome. Yeah. So was that fun? I mean, now you're in Canada, and it's like a whole new bunch of music to discover that you didn't know about.
Yeah, that was very fun. I saw a lot of great shows there of all types of, well, you know, a lot of bands go through Toronto, where I was.
Right.
And but then I learned about the amazing Sadies, another mind blower. But, I mean, there's just way too many Canadian bands to get into it. There's so many good Canadian bands. And I was lucky enough to be working on a project that was surrounded by an excellent crew, many of which were deeply connected to the music scene and turned me on to new things every day. So
yeah,
it was great.
That's how you find good music.
Yeah.
It's tech people.
That's right.
They have the best music ever.
Well, a lot of them are extremely talented and secreting away their magic. And every once in a while, they'll open up and show you how amazing they are. So
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny because my guest that was on when I was waiting for you to come runs the Fanboy Nation magazine. He was my intern when I worked on the Stern station. He was like 20, and now he runs this magazine. And, you know, it's interesting how it's kind of become cool to be a nerd. When I was a kid, we sort of hid that. Like, you didn't want anybody to know you were a nerd. Now I sort of wear that badge proudly. I'm nerdy.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, it used to be that if you were very, very concerned sometimes, almost obsessively concerned about what you loved and what you were interested in, then it was considered, well, you know, why aren't you out there on the football field?
Right, exactly.
Kicking someone's ass.
Yes.
I'm been back at my house listening to a Tom Waits song for the last 3 months. It's not what's nerdy about that. I mean, Einstein was kind of a nerd and he helped us out. So.
I think that the world. I think like those commercials now, right? Are they for HP or IBM about how the nerds are kind of being stalked by fans? I think it's cool. Nerds make the world go round. I mean, have your computer because of a nerd. You
right.
have a cure, a penicillin because of a nerd.
Right.
A lot of things came out of people who, you know, like you said, weren't on the football field or holding a pom-pom.
Right. And like you said, like we were talking about before, if it weren't for the nerds that I was fortunate enough to be introduced to by accident or intentionally when I was a kid, I wouldn't know anything about music. I mean, I was fortunate enough to intersect with that world at the right time, you know? And when you're developmental and it gets down in your heart and it gets in your brain, then thank God for those men and women who are encyclopedias of music, you know,
yeah.
They have it all inside. So.
Absolutely. Right. Do you find it harder to find music on the internet? Has it become harder for you since more and more record stores have closed and it's become more now this whole big cyber world where you go look for it?
I've not really gotten so into that side of it. I'd still kind of try and, I'm locked into looking at records, you know. I love it when someone sends me a song, or I can research or find something that would take me previously years and years, or I would just wouldn't be able to find it. That's amazing, you know. Things like SoundCloud, you hear people making their own pieces, or you hear strange versions of things that you typically wouldn't come across. But vinyl's coming back. Everybody knows that.
Absolutely.
You know? So.
Yeah,
and it should never have been forgotten, and it never really was. It just didn't compete too well with the commercial side of things. But no, that's the be all and end all for me.
Well, I think vinyl's almost becoming sort of now for collectors. You know, for people that really love listening to something, having something.
But it always was. I mean, record collectors are some. I mean, you've got baseball card collectors, you've got record collectors, you've got stamp collectors. These people are—they're serious. There's no question about that. They believe till the day they die that what they're doing is their main. And some of them collect all three or more than that. I think vinyl is just coming back because it sounds better and because it's you've got something in your hand. You can see the cover, and yeah, everyone's heard this this rant a million times, probably in a thousand different languages, but I think hopefully there will be more collectors. It'll be great if in 50 years from now you'll go through the houses of the world and see every kid with a shelf full of records, right?
Completely awesome. No, I agree. Well, but now when you were collecting, did you know you were collecting to collect when you were a kid? Or were you just building sort of your music collection? Because when we were kids, there were records or there were cassettes and there were some 8-tracks still around. So you didn't really collect because you thought you were collecting. You were just amassing your music catalog. It's like a kid's having an iPod now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, initially it was just because the music was so fascinating. It was so compelling, you know. The more that you go to record stores, the more you get exposed to some very serious people. They may give you an elbow in the rib because you're trying to grab a record they've got their eye on. But that's different shakes for different people, you know. What do you want? Some people are some people... That's their livelihood, you know, buying and selling records, which is a very noble occupation,
fantastic.
Right?
Absolutely. Now, do you still find places where you can go and shop and that smell that record stores have and you just thumb through piles of stuff trying to find a jewel?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's out there. I mean, just go look for it, you know, walk down the street, keep your eyes open there. And there seems to be like, at least around this city, that record stores are going through a bit of a rebirth as well. I see them popping up here and there more and more. I mean, garage sales, flea markets.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah, all the used record stores. When I was in college, when people were really dumping their vinyl, mm-hmm. so everybody wanted CDs. Like you said, you could get an album for 10 cents.
Yeah.
And I think I picked up so many things that I missed in my childhood
mm-hmm.
or that my allowance wouldn't buy and would just come home with like, you know, $5, $10 worth of albums. It was like 50 albums and just all these wonderful things that I missed or I was too young for. You know, I mostly got into, you know, music my parents didn't buy me when I was 9 or so. So that was 1976 for me. 77, yeah. So just all the stuff from the early 70s I missed and from the 60s I missed.
Mm-hmm.
The 70s are kind of that's kind of my music decade. That's what I love.
Me too.
Is that it, really?
Well, I mean, that's when I grew up, and that's why I love music from all different periods, and I'm pretty limited in what I understand. I mean, I'm still kind of locked into the generation that I grew up with, and 15 years on either side, you know. I'm not an aficionado of 40s, 30s, 20s, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But,
yeah,
I love it when
true.
I hear it.
You know, but there was something about the 70s, and I think I've learned more and more about it having interviewed people who grew up in that time and who were signed in that time and who were scouted in that time. It was really the music industry was, I think, at that time the most of an artist medium. You know, you would find somebody because they were just amazing, and you would sign them, and then, you know, a 3-4 album deal, and they could take some time to develop it and find their sound and wait for a hit. You know, now you pretty much better have a hit before you're signed. It's a whole... And every time I talk to somebody... Yesterday I had Buffy Ford Stewart on the show, who was married to John Stewart from the Kingston Trio, and she was talking about, you know, just sort of the difference of what it was like to put an album out then and mm-hmm. what it's like she's just released an album now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a different time.
A different time. But there's on the bright side, there's a lot of energy that's going into self-produced music now.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of revitalized it and brought it back to that time on an independent level.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got the desire and the drive, you can kind of figure out how to do anything.
Yeah.
And it's obvious there's a lot of really great music. I mean, there's so much now that you wonder how it's all going to find a home, but there's almost too much choice now. But that's only a good thing, because it's a lot better than there being too many bombings, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. That's why I wondered if you found the internet overwhelming, because there's so many places
Absolutely.
To look and so much music to look for, and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
craziness.
Yeah, absolutely. It can suck you right down.
Okay, so what are we playing?
Hold on, I can't see. I can look at that screen. What's
okay,
that?
Come see me. We're picking it out. It's all Gail's picks today.
Let's play that.
This one?
Yeah, there.
Okay. All right, here we go. So set this up for me. Tell me where this came from and how you found it and who it is. Because I just have songs. I don't have... There you go.
What happened to my hips?
Oh, no.
My cans are broken. Oh,
no,
my God.
No, not a broken can. There you go.
All right. Lucinda Williams. That's all I got
to
say.
Oh, that's all you need to know. All right. That's fantastic. The Sheet of Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. And this is Lucinda Williams. And here we go.
You got a sense of humor. You're
found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. That was Lucinda Williams, Real Life Bleeding Fingers and Broken Guitar Strings. And my guest all the show is Gail Harold, picking out music for me. So when did you, Gail, sort of get back into country? Because you said for a while country wasn't cool. What was it that, or Southern rock or Southern flavored stuff? Because certainly Lucinda Williams is, I guess, considered alt country.
Yeah, I was never an anti anything. I just, when I was maybe like 13, 14, 15, just starting to, I probably had something to do with hormones and
right.
And the change from,
I'm a kid
to an older kind of person. I just didn't want to be like doing what my sister was doing. You know, I didn't want to listen to her records. But she terrorized me. She was good at it, and we fought back. And that's why I wanted to play that song, because it reminds me. I was saying before, when I was in the car with her, we were driving back to Atlanta from North Carolina, and we listened to that song, and it just totally rocked her. The tears started falling. If you listen to that song, it'll do it. It'll do it to you when there's not some moron like myself talking.
Well, you weren't talking when people can go back and listen to it being played, and you're not talking during
but
it.
But I was going to ask you, that tagline, "We say what we want."
Yeah.
That reminds me. I think the chant, like one of the refrains that, like Manchester United, don't they say we do what we want? Like Manchester, the football team from.
Oh, I like that.
Real football, not American football. Yeah. Manchester United in England. There, I think that their chant is "We do what we want."
Oh, I like
think
that.
I don't know that. I don't know how it goes. We do.
It's very rebellious, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
There are a lot of hosts in here way more rebellious than me that want to say every word they can think of that starts with S or F or C or whatever they. But you know, for me, I came from rebellion. Mm-hmm. I came from cable TV and then worked on the Stern station where we would work at 3 a.m. and just get far enough to get fined and then pull back.
Right.
So when I got here and I could do anything I wanted, I thought, oh, okay. But I guess I kept thinking I was going to do it, and then I just never did.
I mean, up until this moment, I've been so worried about what was coming out of my mouth.
No, like
I was going to
you're gonna be okay.
Get you a fine or something.
Yeah. You're going to be okay.
I could say poop.
I could hear you kind of stop and censor yourself. I wonder what was going to come out. You can definitely say poop. That's totally okay.
Right.
And yeah, I think if you're over 4, you're allowed to say poop.
Mm-hmm.
So how has music changed for you since you moved to Los Angeles? I mean, do you get out and see artists live here?
I do. Yeah. How has it changed? Not really at all. I mean, I still have my records. I still have my standbys and new things. There's a lot of great things happening. People should check out the Electric Flower Group. Check them out. They're local. They'll blow your mind.
Awesome. I think people think sometimes that there's more music here, but I think sometimes it's almost, like we talked about the internet before, harder to find music here because there's so much of it. You know, if you lived in a really small town, you would probably know the 5 best bands. Everybody knows. Everybody goes see them on Saturday night. But in a place like this where there's so much happening on a national level, international level, local level, people just starting, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah. One of the great things about being in a city like this that's so intrinsically, I mean, it's just full of music that even if you think you know every band or you go to every show of touring bands that come, a lot of, you know, these people that are playing day in, day out, they have side bands, they have other bands. They're just so dedicated that you never know what's going to happen when you start pushing the rocks around, what's going to be underneath. And that, to me, is really inspiring, you know?
Yeah.
Some days you're too burnt out to even think about listening to another song, but when you decide to get out of your house and go for a walk or maybe go see something, you realize that you're wasting your time because there's too much good stuff. You can't let it all get away.
So true.
Before
it's
the
so
sun
true.
Goes down.
So very true. And I've seen this town turn from when I first moved up here and did my first TV show, it was just the end of the hair bands and the beginning of grunge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys I knew that were wearing pink spandex and glitter were suddenly cutting their hair and changing their band name from, you know, Pink Popsicle to Hate and then trying to have this grunge sound and wearing the flannels and taking their real names back. And it was really interesting to see them sort of try to push a square peg into a round hole, because I think you are sort of organically what you are.
Yeah.
And there was a there was an amazing wonderment to the late 80s and early 90s here with the rock scene. I mean, it was craziness. You would walk down the Sunset Boulevard and it would be 20 thick with people. I mean, you couldn't even, it was just like people were just standing in the streets. I mean, I think that's why they forbid it, because people's cars could never get through and people were just everywhere. And you would just pass out flyers and people would come to your shows. And it was really a community that was happening. It was like a Woodstock happening all the time. And it was crazy, crazy fun.
Sorry that I missed that.
And you'd walk in one club and see something and walk out and walk in another club and see something. And it was all, you know, costumes and glamour and hairspray.
I would have loved to have been here, because that's one of the one thing that I experienced only really ever in New Orleans, walking down the street, and you could be crossing from one corner to the next, and you realize that in every bar, on every there's multiple bars on each corner, there's bands playing. They're all playing at the same time.
I know. That's amazing.
And then there's buskers on the street around them.
Right.
And it just, it's a cacophony, but it's beautiful. I would love to be able to experience that on the Strip.
It was something. It was something. I'm glad I got to see a little bit of it before it ended, because it was really when the Key Club was Gazzari's, and it was magic. And you would go to the Rainbow, and there'd be, you know, people that literally just got off the bus that day, mixed with Lemmy Kilmister and guys from Poison and guys from Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses, just kind of all hanging out together. It was just really interesting. Really interesting time to be here.
Yeah.
Very fascinating.
Bring it back.
Bring back the glitter. So what are we doing next? What do you think? Did you bring me a Metallica song?
Yeah, let me see where it is.
Let's do that. Since we're talking about rock and metal, let's do the Metallica song.
Where are we?
Right here.
No. Where is it?
What's it called?
I can't see. It's called The Wait. Wait, does it not get on there?
Oh, I don't think it's on here.
That sucks.
Oh, we'll have to do that next
time. Okay, let's go in a totally different direction.
Yes.
But something kind of scary.
Okay.
Right there.
Die, Die, My Darling?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Who is this? Oh, set this up for me as soon as you get to the mic.
Okay. From a cover of Misfits records, Misfits songs by Holland Greco and her fantastic band. Die, Die, My Darling.
Awesome. Let's do it. This is Die, Die, My Darling. And it is the Sheena Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. I'm just trying to load this one up. And quick break, and we're going to play some music, and we'll be right back with you.
Thank you.
Freedom Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. And that's Die, My Darling. Gail, now, is that the band name and the song name?
No, that's the name of the song. That's a Misfits song.
And it was
covered by Holland Greco and her band. And speaking of local musicians.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's local and out playing? How'd you discover her?
I was introduced to her by a friend of mine, Jesse. They're good friends. And got to know her over some time, and then she told me that they were making this record that was all Misfits covers, and I was like, really? I got to hear that. And then when it was done, she sent me a copy of one of the tracks, and it's just, as you can hear, her voice and the instrumentation, the arrangement, it's scarier almost than Glenn Danzig, but not really, because now he's gonna
right, because
break my skull.
Because Glenn's got the whole thing with Satan being his pal.
So
you have to above all things is you have to always think about Satan.
But actually, that cover is so good that it makes you realize how good the original is, and they exist in their own worlds, but they share that métier of soul and blues and evil. Which you put those three things together.
Hey, soul, blues, and evil.
What can you do?
Work for Robert Johnson.
Hey.
So is that don't you think that that's sort of the how you can tell when a song is really good? Because when a song is really good, it can be picked apart, put together, performed in any genre of music, and it's still good.
I mean, it seems to me like they have the potential to do that. We've all heard bad covers. I've performed some bad covers in my shower, and I would never want to hear anybody. Anyone ever hear them? I've probably insulted into the ether people that I would die to polish their shoes. But songs that are good are good. That thing about writing something with three verses with three lines each and one little chorus, I can rip you apart forever.
Right.
It takes so much to get there.
It's like it's permanently etched in your soul, and it's there forever and ever.
Yeah.
It's
very
true.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Thin Lizzy CD that you brought me today, you were actually given by a fan.
I was, yes.
And do a lot of your fans know that you love music this much? Well, they do now, but I mean, before today?
No, I guess they picked it up by conversations that I've either had with someone that was jotting down notes or, people's passions, they get out there. It's kind of overwhelming to have a total stranger walk up to you and give you a record that you love.
Yeah,
and
it's beautiful
to know that that's something that you would respond to.
Right.
It's like Christmas.
But it's when you think about it. I mean, energetically, and I get a little airy fairy, and I like that you're bearing with me with that. When
you already talked about everything but the girl, so we got off on the right foot.
Right. Good. Fantastic. that music influenced you. And then you grew up and became an artist, and then you did your craft, and that influenced somebody, and then they brought the music back to you. I mean, that's damn near a perfect circle of energy.
Well, it's reason enough to make art, right? Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's like I think a lot of people feel this way. It's not I'm not saying anything new. I mean, music, literature, painting, theater, films, there's so many others. They save your life, Especially when you're a kid, you're trying to figure stuff out and you don't lock into the place that you were born or the circumstances that you were raised in. And I mean, it's like a magic door.
Yeah.
You walk through that and it's kind of Narnia-esque, isn't it?
It's fantastic. I grew up opposite. I was lucky that I was raised by somebody who was like that. And had found that magic place, and then raised me to find my own magic place.
Yeah.
So I was allowed to pretty much play with and have whatever I wanted. But for people that, I think a lot of times music is an amazing escape, as is anything, television, films, whatever you're. For my mom, it was books and movies. So for her, when we would move somewhere, we didn't know anybody, she'd be like, let's pack up everything, go see a movie, or let's go to the bookstore and just get books, or let's go to a museum and then get books about the museum. And that kind of cultural stimulus. And now she kind of jokes like, I don't know how you wound up in this business. I thought you were going to become a doctor. And I'm like, well, considering by the time I was five, you'd taken me to every Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. Gee, I wonder why. Considering one of my first presents was the Sweet Charity soundtrack, I wonder why I'm still in this business.
Yeah.
But for me, art is a safe place. It's always a place that's kind of lovely.
It's a safe place and that's lovely. But on the other hand, and only in the same spirit, it can be the most terrifying, threatening thing in the world, but you get to experience those things in a sometimes honest, sometimes not so honest way, but it's important. I mean, the Stooges, you know?
Yeah.
That is it. That's that they're talking about. What he said it. He has said it. He's put it out there on the line. I mean, some things that are of his own philosophy, but just hearing that energy, that attack when you're growing up, it's a reinforcement of expression for better or for worse or whatever it is, and that by itself is reason enough for it to be protected at all times.
Absolutely.
In every way, right?
I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we've got time for one more. What are we doing?
Let me see, because I can't
okay.
see.
Okay. So come over here, and we're gonna figure it out. Next time, we're going to make you a sheet so we can both see.
Number seven.
Okay, let's do number seven. There's two number sevens. There is Alone and Forsaken, there is Teclo, and there's This Broken Heart.
This Broken Heart.
Okay, This Broken Heart. Here we go. And set this up for me really quick and tell me who this is and how you found this.
My first time playing music on a radio show, and I'm going out with Funkadelic, just like I told my mom I would.
Oh, nice! Way to go! Well, you'll get no arguments from me there. Okay, this is This Broken Heart, Funkadelic. Here we go. It's the Sheena Metal Experience.
Don't cry.
LA Talk Radio.
Gemini material laying around. And I ain't no Gemini. I just want to make sure we ain't half-stepping and short-stroking. Can you get to that? Like this broken heart.
Machine Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio, That's Funkadelic, This Broken Heart, playlist, all this show by the wonderful Gail Harold. Gail, this was so much fun. I can't believe in almost 20 years on the radio, I have never done this.
That's amazing.
So can we do this again soon?
Yeah,
will you bring
anytime.
More stuff?
Yeah.
Bring in the turntable, we'll do it next time?
We'll bring some wax. And I just want to say before I get off, if I don't acknowledge my psychosis, if I've insulted anyone or mispronounced your grandfather's middle name or whatever I could have done that was wrong, I apologize.
I like that.
I'll buy you some fried rice.
Oh, I like that story. Okay. And I'm going to see you in June, of course, at the Rise and Shine USA convention.
Yeah.
And hopefully before that, we'll do another group thing and get everybody in. And maybe even before that, we'll get you to do a little more music on vinyl.
Yeah. We'll have a vinylitis.
I would love that. And you know what I'm going to do is I'll make sure to email you and get the whole playlist of all the artists and get everything right. And then I'll post it so everybody who's listening will know all the great bands, and they can all go and download all the songs and discover some new music.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you guys hear that I'm going to be back on, please email suggestions.
Oh, I like that.
How do you do requests?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, email them to me. Go to SheenaMetalExperience.com or LATalkRadio.com and email me suggestions for next time.
Yeah.
For our next playlist. Fun times, and then I'll send them to Gail, and we'll figure out a good playlist.
Righto.
You're amazing, my friend. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And you're still pretty much not online.
I'm still pretty much not online.
Do you think you will ever social network?
Maybe, but when you social network, sometimes the Beatles come out of the wall, and you got to be careful.
And I agree with you. Very, very true. It's the Sheet of Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. And again, if you missed any of the links for any of this great music, you can go to SheenaMetalExperience.com or LATalkRadio.com. Send me an email, and I'll gladly forward those links over to you. I'm Sheena. It's The Experience. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and you know what we do here, people. Every Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, we rip the veil off the human sideshow and expose the creatures I like to call big old Homo sapiens at their most bizarre and always at their most beautiful. And as to every day on the show, it may be my show, it is the Sheena Metal Experience after all. Doesn't mean it's not always and forever, undoubtedly and indubitably, you know what I'm going to say, people. Maybe my show, but it's most definitely your experience. Thanks for listening, have a great night, and I'll see you all tomorrow right here on LA Talk Radio.
You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.